MREA presents the Rise Up podcast.
We would like to take a moment to thank one of our megawatt sponsors, Organic Valley. Organic Valley holds themselves to the highest standards and are proud to be one of the few always organic brands. Organic Valley products are sustainably made without the use of toxic pesticides, synthetic hormones, antibiotics, or GMOs. Learn more at organicvalley.coop.
All right, welcome back to the Rise Up podcast. And today we are joined by James Owen, who is the executive director of Renew Missouri. Growing up on a farm in Missouri, James used his rural roots experience to become a dedicated champion for consumer protection and strategic resource management. 2017, James, you were named the executive director of Renew Missouri. And in that capacity, you've dedicated the organization and your professional endeavors to advancing and positioning Missouri as a state leader in clean energy development. You hold a BA from Drury University and a law degree from University of Kansas. You're a licensed attorney in both Kansas and Missouri, and that has got you in some legal responsibilities for Renew Missouri, including serving as an expert witness before the Missouri Public Service Commission. And you're also appointed as public counsel by the governor. You've been advocating on issues before the Public Service Commission. James, how are you doing today? Welcome.
Well, I just feel like I just listened to my obituary.
Not yet. You got more to do.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I've been on a number of calls with you related to inclusive financing and have been both excited and jealous about the progress that Missouri has made with pay-as-you-save financing. And we will surely talk about that. So congratulations before we even get started. It's very exciting.
Thank you.
Time for you all.
It is.
Yeah, so maybe you could start by just telling us a little bit about your background and what led you to your clean energy advocacy work.
Oh my gosh, I feel like you already covered it. But I think what's important, you know, because I've been working at Renew Missouri for almost 7 years now. It'll be 7 years in May of 2024. I've worked here as executive director. The work we've done in building on interest in renewable energy, clean energy, energy efficiency in the state to make it a reality is something that I have been able to attribute to my background, not just as an attorney, but also as someone who has managed groups before, someone who has managed offices. You know, my role as public counsel was not just advocating before the Public Service Commission on behalf of ratepayers, but also managing a team of about 20 people. And so being able to have a team together of really talented folks doing this work, it's not just me, but it's also the ability to get those people to work together. And that, I think, is the most impactful part of my background, is the ability to do that, is to help lead a team in a state that is often seen as a challenging place for clean energy. But I think we're showing that there are things that can work here.
Yeah, and obviously, and really appreciate that perspective, because teamwork makes the dream work, as they say. Maybe tell us a few things, priorities that you've worked on at Renew Missouri, or priorities that you're getting into now.
The thing that we've really worked on for the past 7 years is, among other things, is not only just trying to see regulated utilities build up their energy efficiency portfolios and their renewable generation mix, but also trying to work with municipal utilities as well as rural electric cooperatives for that as well. That's a little tougher because there are no real venues to intervene and get involved with that. You've got to kind of work with them directly. That has been a real challenge, but something that we have had some success with reaching out to them on. So it's not just the component of having more wind and solar in Missouri, which we have seen significant advances in that, but also trying to make energy efficiency something that utility companies are interested and excited about doing. We have a law on the books here in Missouri, the Missouri Energy Efficiency Investment Act, which for investor-owned utilities is a really good mechanism to encourage them to offer an energy efficiency portfolio. And we really have found that to be pretty useful. We've seen hundreds of millions of dollars be put into that. We've saved a lot of electricity from being consumed and being demanded as a result of that. We would like to see energy efficiency get adopted by the municipal utilities and the rural electric cooperatives, those utilities that are not subject to the Missouri Energy Efficiency Investment Act. We do believe that there are ways of doing that can make that attractive to them.
Yeah, maybe let's dig into that. I want to talk to you more broadly about opportunities, but the question on my mind, everybody else's mind, is investor-owned utilities offering pay-as-you-save financing. And so typically what we've seen in many states is that these programs are first offered by co-op and muni utilities, and that's where kind of the first expansion happens. And then in some lucky states, we get some enabling legislation or commission action. It sounds like you had legislation that enabled this. And tell me, did the commission or did the regulators act to require the utilities to do this? Or what's the state of play in Missouri with the pay-as-you-save?
So depending on the utility is kind of differentiates how this came to be for all of them, because right now we have four investor-owned utilities that offer a pay-as-you-save inclusive financing program. You have the three energy investor-owned utilities plus a gas utility, Spire, based out of St. Louis, that also offers a pay-as-you-save program. So starting from the beginning, this is an idea that was brought to me when I was public counsel. This was brought to me by the chief economist at the Office of Public Counsel as a good way of encouraging utilities to do energy efficiency that was offering fair market rates to customers. It was something that was brought to me by, you know, in my capacity as a consumer advocate. And then when I left there and came to work for Renew Missouri, it made sense to continue advocating for it because it was something beneficial that utility companies could do. So with Ameren, which is on the eastern side of Missouri, it serves about 1.2 million customers. They, you know, Renew Missouri and the Office of Public Counsel and some other stakeholders met with Ameren, worked with Ameren. Ameren ended up offering it as a program voluntarily. Liberty Utilities down in southwest Missouri, which only covers a couple of 100,000 customers, they ended up offering it voluntarily. Evergy on the out of Kansas City, they were a harder sell. We ended up having to push for that in a docket for the Missouri Energy Efficiency Investment Act, their portfolio. They objected to considering it. But in the end, the regulators, the commission required them to add it. And so depending on which utility you're talking about, it's a different story about how we got here for that. And Spire, I should point out, also voluntarily offered it when they saw that the other electric utilities were going to do it. I think that was to avoid the risks of electrification.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. All right. I got to get my mind around that one. But before we dive into that, I think it's a very interesting topic. Let's just talk about what it is, pay-as-you-save financing, which is basically a site-based investment by the utility in a ratepayer's building that reduces electricity use, and they recover the costs as a charge on the utility bill. So can you tell me kind of like from a consumer's perspective and a utility's perspective, like what do these programs look like in Missouri?
Well, from the consumer perspective, I mean, it's essentially just like any other energy efficiency program. You have a test done, you have an audit conducted, you know, they make recommendations about what can be done to make your home more energy efficient. And instead of you paying for it or you taking out a loan or you getting the money to cover it, the utility pays it. Again, I think you put it really well. It is the utility making a capital investment into the customer's property. And so then it gets paid back through that customer's bill. And, you know, the utility gets to charge a fee for that, and they are the ones who administer it. And so from the customer's perspective, it is essentially a way of getting energy efficiency put in your house. Doesn't follow you along. If you move, it stays with the meter. There's no credit check to this. It doesn't stay on your credit if you've done it, which I think is a really strong consumer protection. Yeah, it's not a loan. It's not a lien. Or at least in Missouri, there's no need for this to be recorded anywhere. It doesn't get held against the title of your home. Also, another good thing is if you have the cooperation of your landlord, it can be something a renter can take advantage of as well, which a lot of energy efficiency programs don't. It aren't available to someone who just rents where they live. From the utility perspective, I mean, at least when we talk to utility companies, at least in Missouri with the investor-owned utilities, they have this financial incentive by statute where they can recover lost revenue from energy efficiency. But this doesn't even factor that in. This is something where they can make money off of this program without it. And moreover, I think when you're talking about being able to control, you know, consumption, control demand. I mean, most our utilities have a very robust AMI infrastructure right now. So this is something that's very easy for them to offer. And that's very easy for them to have, you know, the ability to control this and to manage this. You know, it's a way of kind of handling how much power you have to make, how much power you have to sell. You know, to us, it's a great planning tool for the utility companies as well.
Yeah, let's dive in a little bit. I like how clearly you made the customer proposition, and we're going to dive into that a little bit in a second. But let's talk about from the utility perspective, because it seems to me, and maybe I'm misguided here, you're in the throes of this in Missouri, but it seems really transformational for a utility, because typically a utility, from an investor standpoint, you know, they make returns on investment from their capital expenditures. Mm-hmm. And energy efficiency is typically a threat to that. If people use less electricity, then less justification for them to build stuff. But in this program, what it does is refocus the utility's capital expenditures into the customer's building to reduce their energy use. But they, I mean, it's similar to the utility, right? Whether they're building a peaking gas plant or they're putting a high efficiency boiler in a house, they're still getting that rate of return. This time they're just collecting it from a single ratepayer. Is that kind of, is that how it works? And is it, do you see that kind of transforming the conversation around efficiency with utilities?
Well, yeah, and certainly, and again, I should note the Missouri Energy Efficiency Investment Act does allow the utility to get a rate of return on their energy efficiency programs quite the same way they would if they were building a power plant or a solar array or anything, or a transmission line. But yes, here, I mean, it is an investment. I mean, we look at this as they are putting money into this to manage the delivery of power. And because we are so concerned right now about the increases in demand power, you know, Missouri has been relatively flat as far as demand goes for several decades. But like in a lot of different states where you're starting to see data centers get built, you're starting to have to think about electric vehicles, when you're starting to think about potential investments in electrification, we're going to start seeing a lot more electricity getting used in the next 5 to 10 years. And so the ability to manage that, the ability to have some control over that, not just through pay as you save, but also through other distributive resources, which we would hope that, say, battery storage could be used hand in hand with pay as you save eventually. We believe that this is no different than investing in a piece of equipment. This is something that's investing in your long-term planning as a utility company, and as trying to make sure that demand is being more controlled.
You had mentioned that the utilities have a pretty good advanced metering infrastructure, so they have visibility into kind of like how energy is being used. And then this pay-as-you-save program, you know, one of the challenges with on-bill financing programs, which that, I guess this could be considered that, but it's really more like a utility investment and the cost recovery is on the bill. But one of the challenges with those programs was really the consumer protection piece, is to say, well, is the investment, who's making sure that, you know, the investment is actually saving energy for the house, and like that delta between how much the electricity bill is being reduced and how much the financing payment is, like, can we make that cash flow positive for the ratepayer? And PAYS has some of that structure built in. Is that similar to what's happening in Missouri? How is that kind of consumer protection piece addressed?
Yeah, I certainly think that's one of the benefits of the of how that is structured. I certainly think it is a benefit of the fact that we have investor-owned utilities and therefore regulated utilities that are offering this. So the auditors that are working with the Public Service Commission here can keep an eye on it. Consumer ratepayer advocates can keep an eye on it. And certainly organizations like Renew Missouri, who are involved with these cases as well, are going to be keeping an eye on it. And so that, to me, shows that there's going to make sure that this is something that's very positive. And one of the challenges we have right now, yes, all of these utilities are offering it, but one of the challenges we have right now is because everything costs more money, equipment costs more money. The co-pays that goes into this, because sometimes there is some upfront cost that goes along with this, depending on what you're having done. Like, say, for an HVAC system, it's really expensive to do that. And so when you're talking about some of the numbers that we're looking at here in the state to have a initial investment from the consumer is prohibitive. And we are trying to figure out ways that can help with that. We are looking at these homes and HERA money that we hope is going to be available. We know the state of Missouri is going to be applying for those funds. They have signaled they're going to be applying for about $156 million in those funds. Public comments are ongoing about how that money is going to be spent. We have certainly encouraged our state division of energy to consider working with some of these utility programs.
Yeah, that's really, you know, James, as you're talking, that's really interesting, right? Because the utility, because of the Inflation Reduction Act, and correct me if I'm wrong, I imagine the utility, since they're actually, since it's their asset. They're putting in the cold climate heat pump, or they're putting in the tax qualified so they could get the tax credit investment. Would the utility get that tax credit for installing some of these technologies?
Well, that's to be seen. I mean, certainly, I think the question is, yeah, how is that going to be administered? Whether it goes directly to the customer or whether it's something that the utility can help administer for the customer. I mean, ultimately, I think the question becomes, is it something that if it can enhance a rebate or can enhance a program that's already being offered by the utility, can it be attributed? Can it be attributable to the utility to get credit for their Missouri Energy Efficiency Investment Act portfolio?
And the cost reductions passed on to the customer and those copays. And then the same with the formula funding that's coming to each state for the home energy efficiency funding, also from the Inflation Reduction Act. So what you're suggesting is that from Missouri's program, that some of these home energy improvements that would come from pay-as-you-save financing, that whether it be the customer or the utility qualify for those rebates, because those are not actually rebates, they're on bill reductions in the cost. So regardless of who's paying for them, can we reduce the cost of some of these things using that homes funding?
Yeah. And I mean, make no mistake, I don't believe that a lot of PAYS is not going to a lot of low income customers. We do not see PAYS as a replacement for weatherization or LIHEAP or anything like that. We see this as for customers who are in between those who qualify for low-income programs and those who would be able to be qualified for traditional capital to do this work. We see PAYS as something that can, you know, focus on those who aren't in either one of those categories. So yes, being able to try to reduce costs and being able to see benefit there, you know, whether it goes to the customer or whether it goes to the utility to help for that benefit, in the end, it's still accomplishing an energy efficiency saving, and we would like to see that maximized. So wherever that has to go, that's what we want.
Right. Because the opportunity really is through this tax credits and through the state administered efficiency funding. How can that be layered to make sure that a customer that's getting a service through pay as you save can access that? And as to reinforce that, you know, the big benefit here, which you already said, but just to make clear, is that customer qualification for a pay as you save program administered by a utility is utility bill payment history, which the vast majority of people have a solid utility bill payment history, as opposed to a credit check, which is a big barrier for low to moderate income households, is the credit worthiness and just the interest rate that has to be paid on a consumer loan nowadays. And so enabling some of these cost reductions through this funding from the Inflation Reduction Act could really like help these programs pencil for more consumers, is what you're saying.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. That is our hope. I mean, my only goal is to make all of this as accessible as possible, to have as many options for as many customers as we can. And for me, PAYS is got a tremendous opportunity there, as long as we can cut down on, you know, upfront cost, which is a big challenge for anybody that's trying to do energy efficiency. But I do think that if we had just a little bit more money, a little bit of this opportunity from this funding that's coming, it could make a big difference in making sure that pay as you save, this inclusive financing that we're doing, is going to be successful in Missouri, at least.
Yeah. So typically a pay as you save program would have like a qualified contractor network that would be working with homeowners, as you had said. Is that how Missouri's program work? Are there qualified contractors? Like, who is the customer interacting with?
Yeah, typically the customer is interacting with the list of contractors that are working with the utilities to provide these services. I mean, you know, there's a lot of work that gets put into who's on that list, how qualified they are. And, you know, I think there's also going to be an extra layer of certification that's going to have to go along with some of these programs. So how we get that certified is going to be really critical as well. And that's something we're working with the State Energy Office on, as well as utility companies, to make sure that the right people are doing this, the right people are getting credit for it. And that if there are opportunities for tax credits, that the IRS is going to recognize the paperwork that the customers are getting, so they can see that, they can realize that as well.
And then what, like from a customer perspective, do you have a sense of what interventions are really making the cut for a pay-as-you-save type program? Like what is mostly showing the kind of like highest value, lowest cost at this point?
I mean, ultimately, we're still a little early into the actual work on this, but I really do think anytime you're talking about a house or an apartment, you know, your biggest bang for your buck is going to be your HVAC system, right? I mean, that's expensive. But in the end, I think that, I mean, when you look at like HVAC system compared to all the other electricity consumption in your house, I mean, it's not even close. It's not even close to how much you're having, you know, what you're spending on. So, I mean, to me, if we can do that to make that as cost effective as possible, whether that's using pay as you save, using that inclusive financing or rebates or, you know, a combination of those two things. I mean, we have to, no matter what that cost is, make that affordable, because that to me is ultimately going to be the most consequential thing a person can do as far as energy consumption in their home or their apartment.
Yeah, that's really exciting. You know, Missouri is kind of entering into this national cohort of states and cooperative utilities and municipal utilities that have really used the pay-as-you-save model to, like you said, fill this donut hole, right? Because you have your subsidized programs, which is your weatherization assistance programs and LIHEAP programs. Those are like zero cost entry programs that really hit the lowest income households. But then you have this kind of like lower middle that doesn't qualify for those programs, but doesn't have the credit or the capital to make those investments. And that really is what these pay-as-you-save programs are targeting and enabling. And those same customers do qualify for these homes and HERA rebates that are coming out through the IRA. So that seems like some good work for Renew Missouri and others to make sure that those programs align well with pay-as-you-save.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, we are in this innovation phase, right? Where you know, in these programs, not only have the utilities involved and the customers and consumer advocates, but you're dealing with, you know, this complicated layers of state and federal incentives that all have their own rules. So somebody has to stitch all that together to make it valuable to the homeowner.
And I mean, while I think the IRA is probably going to be one of the most consequential pieces of legislation that ever happens in my lifetime, as far as this work goes, it is going to be up to statewide advocates, consumer advocates, policymakers of the state to make it a reality, to realize its full potential, not only to help with this clean energy transition in this country, but also as an economic development tool. I really do believe that if we can reduce utility bills, it can be a big assistance to a lot of people. And that frees up their money, that frees their ability to do a lot of more things with it. And I'm really hoping that we can be a small piece of that puzzle and getting that solved.
Yeah, the value proposition is so clear, right? In this kind of like more equitable energy transition with pays, like one, we're not going to electrify or transition in any way that's cost effective without energy efficiency. You have to maintain service, reduce electricity use while you electrify, or else we're going to be burdened with a very high cost energy system. And you have to do it in a way that targets the people that need it the most. And that's what pays does. I'm going to use that to turn us into the co-ops and munis, which seem to be your target for this program.
Okay.
Yeah, because the Inflation Reduction Act basically prints money for these groups. It does it in two ways. One, a tremendous amount of money into the rural utility service to help co-ops decarbonize. But the other way is this direct pay, which these co-ops and munis qualify for all of these electrification applications. And pay as you save seems to me to be like the most no-brainer idea for a cooperative municipal utility to serve their members or residents, to do it profitably, to save everybody money. So what's going on? What's the resistance here, James? Talk to me.
I think the resistance is the problem you have anytime anything new or innovative comes up. I mean, look, rural electric cooperatives have been running. They have been, you know, bringing rural America into the future for a long time. Certainly as a farm kid myself, I know how important it is that electrification happened to rural Missouri. But the status quo makes the money. The status quo makes municipal utilities money. The idea that they would have to do anything that would necessarily be responsive or go beyond that is a challenge. Because, look, it takes a lot of effort just to run your day-to-day operations. I'm not going to sit here and say that they're, you know, twirling their mustache and saying, ha, 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 we don't want to do clean energy. I think it's just a matter of habit. I think it's a matter of they have their system set up. But what is important and what you have to constantly do, especially when you're dealing with a monopoly, because we have a vertically integrated system in our state, we have to constantly be challenging them and pushing them to do things that are ultimately going to be better for their customers. And look, financing that has always been a problem. I mean, it's one of the reasons why Renew Missouri, as a part of the Rural Power Coalition, which could be a whole other podcast, but the work we did in trying to get financing for rural electric cooperatives in of themselves into the Inflation Reduction Act was a process that took over 2 years for us to do. And I'm very proud of that work. And I'm glad that funding is available. And I know that a lot of rural electric cooperatives have applied to take advantage of that money. The biggest problem with it is there's not enough. We're hoping that rural electric cooperatives see the opportunity that presents themselves. They see not only the New Era funding, but the PACE funding, and not the PACE that we think about when we talk about other, you know, with the property assessed clean energy. It's a different type of PACE that's in the Inflation Reduction Act. But we're really hoping that they can see that there's opportunities there to modernize and continue their work of moving into the future, which I think not only will like benefit their existing customers, but I do believe will attract businesses, customers to those areas. Because let me tell you this right now, Nick, rural Missouri is struggling. We are struggling to attract business. We are struggling to attract people there. We are seeing population declines. Something has got to help turn that around. I believe that if you had the utility companies there, embracing the values of the modern professional, of the modern generations, there could be something that could be done to help reverse those unfortunate trends. And so we're hoping that over this next 8 years where this funding is going to be available, that that money is taken advantage of and that's being used to help continue rural Missouri into the future.
Yeah, what an opportunity, you know, that this whole construct of, you know, we're at right now, like the average age of a nuclear power plant in the United States is 45, 44 years old. They're licensed to operate for 40 years. So we're, and the Inflation Reduction Act comes and it gives us this once in a generation opportunity to like remake the energy system. Whatever we do now, we're going to be stuck with for the next 30 to 40 years. So in a place like rural Missouri, you know, the question is for the utilities with these like pay-as-you-save site-based cost recovery is, can we be investing in the distribution system in partnership with customers to reduce electricity costs and to make ourselves more competitive instead of just building big projects? And not that we don't need some big projects, but just building big projects and capturing ratepayers into paying them back. It really is this fundamental question.
Yeah. And as much as you hear about extreme weather affecting the ability to manage demand and that sort of thing, I mean, I think energy efficiency is the most cost-effective, most efficient way of doing that, without question.
Absolutely. Well said. Well, let's address this PACE. You brought it up, and I think it's important in Missouri to clarify the difference between PACE and PAYS, because Missouri had kind of a failed experiment with residential PACE, at least in some instances. And I think I want to clarify how much better a pay-as-you-save program is at consumer protection, or at least in design, than can be in PACE. So maybe talk to like what problems happened with PACE in Missouri and how do you see PAYS as different or better?
Oh, wow. It's quite a question. But I mean, you know, the idea that property assessed clean energy, which is what PACE stands for, it's got to be, it's statute. It is something that has to be, you know, it basically creates a political subdivision in an area where if a city or a county has adopted a PACE district, then there is the ability to borrow money that essentially you pay back through your tax bill. Like it basically, it's just a tax that gets assessed. Look, I think one of the biggest challenges with PACE at a residential level here was the fact that the county collectors, the people responsible for collecting the PACE district assessments, did not like it. They did not like doing it. They did not like an extra thing to have to do. Some of them had ideological problems with it. I really do believe had the county collectors been more open and receptive to it, it could have been more successful. They fought it. They challenged it. They trashed it. They made it much more difficult. But ultimately, you would have to pay that assessment once a year when you got your tax bill. And sometimes it's tough for people. It's tough paying your property taxes on a house sometimes, especially if you're in that kind of donut hole that you referenced earlier. I mean, look, people lose their houses at tax sales all the time. That would be the fate of a property that if you weren't making your PACE financing, among other things. I don't think that PACE financing put anyone over the top, but if you're having to pay your taxes and that and all these other things, it could ultimately be a problem. But I do think PACE still works. as a basis for commercial property. I think it's been very successful with that. I mean, I know Missouri was one of the few states where you had a residential and a commercial PACE. I still think commercial PACE has a role. I really do. But I do think pay-as-you-save, because you're dealing directly with a utility bill and it being baked in that utility bill, and everyone pays their utility bill once a month. I mean, most people are able to do that. That is a little easier to chew than having a one-year assessment that you get on your tax bill like you would with PACE. I think you get this once a month. It is, in theory, has helped driving your bill down because you're using less power. I do think that that's an advantage from a consumer perspective that it has. Is it's something you interact with once a month. It's something that is already a part of what you're paying. And then ultimately, it is something that I think is a little more manageable for people.
Yeah, because you're dealing with, like you said, it's all on one bill. And the cost savings and the financing are represented on that bill. And in design, the design is to keep that bill at the same rate or less. And by the time you purchase that, pay for that financing, that asset becomes yours, and it's all reductions on your bill. You've paid it off. The utility now transfers ownership to you, and it's yours. That is definitely the idea that you have to pay for it all once a year on your tax assessment is, for the PACE, property assessed clean energy, is difficult. Whereas with pay as you save, you're eating your meal a little bit at a time while you're saving energy.
I certainly think the perception of PACE made it look more challenging for consumers. Right. Certainly.
And then, beyond pay as you save. So, I mean, we're focusing a lot on that because, of course, it's such a revolutionary and successful program, and you are so poised with the buy-in from investor-owned utilities to extend this opportunity, this energy efficiency opportunity, to so many millions of people in Missouri. I think we've established that this is really promising from both a consumer and utility side. It's a success in Missouri. It's something we're jealous about. In other states like Wisconsin, that where I reside, that do not have this program yet, but we will get it sooner or later.
Let me know what I can do to help.
Yeah, well, that's kind of my question to you, in a way, is, you've been through this process in Missouri. It sounds like Missouri started with kind of an advantageous piece of legislation that incentivized energy efficiency in all utilities. But for other states that are looking to do this, what would you say are some of the lessons learned or guidance that you would give others that are really looking to advance this kind of inclusive on-bill financing in partnership with utilities?
Well, let me say, I think outside of the legislation that we have passed here that incentivizes investing in utilities to do this, I think beyond that, the most important thing we did here in this state was consumer groups and, clean energy advocates and environmental groups all got on the same page with this. To me, when I've gone into other states where there's been challenges and there's been resistance to this, it usually comes from the official ratepayer advocate or from other consumer groups. I have spent a lot of effort trying to explain to them what the consumer benefits of this are. I think there is a general sense from some people that if the utility company is offering something, it must be bad. It must be designed to just pry money away from their customers. Look, I get it. Utility companies are a business. They got to make money. But I do think PACE does have all these advantages we've already talked about. I think having that education and being on more uniformity with those consumer groups is really, really critical. I think also a willingness to listen to the utility companies. I mean, we've got really good partners, the utilities who have adopted this. I would say certainly with Ameren and Liberty, more so than Evergy to a certain degree. I mean, they're working to comply with their order, but they didn't voluntarily do this. I think the other two utilities who voluntarily agreed to do this are really good partners in this, really committed to making it work. Having that kind of coordination between those three parties, which usually don't get along with anything, and having that done in advance and answering questions and making sure that all scenarios are worked out, seeing examples from other states like Ouachita Electric in Arkansas, like the incredible success story that has happened down there with their PACE program, or with GEMS in Hawaii. I think that is critical, is working with those groups. I don't think this would have happened in Missouri had all these groups not been coordinated on this. And I think also just, being prepared to explain to the public generally how this benefits the customer, how this benefits the utility. It's tricky. Look, I'm not sitting here and say that, just go talk to people Because look, I mean, no one wants to think about utility policy really when it comes down to it. They complain about their bill, but if they walk into a room and their light turns on, generally speaking, the public is fine, right? Trying to make sure that they have an understanding of how they can have more control over that, how they can have more independence over what their utility bill looks like, or where they get their power, if that's something that's important to them, is to me like where you have to really have this conversation start. It's not just like, oh, look, if you want energy efficiency savings, here's how you do it. It's like, well, I mean, you know, you want to complain about your bill, but if you knew there was something that could actually bring your bill down, and it would be something that is not going to cost you a lot of money, is that something you want to do? Is that something you're interested in? Well, then all of a sudden they start, oh, yeah. But you start talking about like things like, you know, demand and consumption, and I mean, even like environmental issues, people just, they got too many other things to worry about.
Yeah, that, you know, and that maybe that is the secret sauce to the pay as you save program, is since you have these partnering contractors that are qualified to provide service and connect to the utility on bill financing for these programs, they can go to a house and say, okay, you'd like to electrify your heating system. Well, here's what it costs in cash. Here's what it would cost you if you were to get a consumer loan. And here's this pay-as-you-save program that's offered by the utility. And when you see those three things side by side, you can't help but be like, oh, I get the energy bill reductions right on the bill. And then I get the financing right on the bill. And, you know, and so it really has this baked in contractor network that is really doing the education out there. And the value proposition is so strong that that's why you see, like you said, you mentioned a number of programs. I think there are programs in over half of U.S. states now. They're not uniform through all utilities. Even in Missouri, you still want to have your munis and your co-ops there, but there are successful programs all over the country now. So we're not the first, right? We've already made some mistakes. Now the mistakes have been made. Now it's replicate time.
Yeah, and I really, you know, look, we're still working through a lot of things. I think Inflation Reduction Act, I think is going to be a significant benefit. I think it's a significant set of resources that will make utilities hopefully look at this a little more carefully. I think it can make it successful in existing programs. But I think it's, you know, it's too early to tell like what impact that's going to have, because a lot of people haven't seen that money yet. I think when they see that money and they see what it can be done, it is really going to make people think a lot about like, well, I mean, this is really good. Like, what else could I be doing? And I hope that if groups like Renew Missouri is doing its job, we are making people aware of this and saying this is an option. And this is an option that is not radical. It is actually can have a lot of benefit, and it's going to make your life easier. It's not going to be something that's going to be a radical change. It's not like putting solar panels on your roof. You should put solar panels on your roof, but I'm saying this is a lot easier than that. So, you know, I'm really hoping that if we are continuing to get that message out there, people are hearing it, and we are going to be doing some more marketing on this and talking about this program and talking about the success in Missouri, that you will start seeing people hear more about it.
Yeah, since you brought up solar, I know that some pay-as-you-save programs in certain utility territories have advanced some solar investments. And you had mentioned at the beginning of this interview, this potential for energy storage and solar as like an energy efficiency investment, because these kind of like the ability to avoid high costs of peak power and to better manage energy could make. So do you have a perspective on when or if solar energy storage might be included in a pay-as-you-save program? And if not, like what needs to happen for that to occur?
Well, I mentioned Wachtell Electric out of Arkansas. They're already doing solar as part of their pays. It does require a co-payment, which is sizable, but they are having some success with it. Again, this is a small distributive cooperative in the Arkansas Delta. I mean, it is one of the poorest parts of that state. And they are seeing a lot of success with incorporating pays. They also have leadership that believes in it. And so that's significant. Let's say in Missouri, which is really like my focus point, we want to make sure that the energy efficiency piece is settled and working. I mean, we still have some challenges. Again, I've already gone over those challenges. I'm hoping that we overcome those challenges. We can start talking about solar and battery storage, because I think it also plays into something that Well, look, Evergy, as an example, Evergy on the western side of our state has a residential battery storage pilot that they're doing right now. I was just actually looking at some of the data that they've already been able to produce earlier. They are working with some of their customers, a lot of the customers that have solar on their roof already, but they've installed battery storage in there. And I mean, could that be something that is either made part of PAYS, or is that something that could be part of a virtual power plant, a VPP, where you're using that, which then it wouldn't make a lot of sense to make the customer pay for that. It should be something that is just another capital investment that the utility is making into the customer's home at the distributive level. Because I mean, I think ultimately when you look at these FERC orders that have come down that are going to be implemented, when you look at the technology that's going to be going around distributive energy resources, I think this distributive level energy efficiency, distributive level battery storage, distributive level solar, they're going to work together. I mean, the question is the customer going to own it or is the utility going to own it? And I think, you know, if the customer wants to own it, it should be a part of their PAYS program. But I would tell you, I think the utility is going to see more benefit from that than the customer. And I'd like to see them have that invested.
It is, but PAYS paves the way, right? It's if you establish this relationship between the utility, the administrator, the contractor, the customer, and you start with successful energy efficiency interventions that serve customer interests and serve the utility interests and serve the statewide energy efficiency interests, it paves the way for greater programs, just like you're saying. So it really is kind of an exciting time. And, you know, kudos to Renew Missouri and others in states across the country that have put in the work to best capture the benefits of the Inflation Reduction Act. And I feel like that's where you're at with your investor-owned utility PAYS programs in exciting times to come. James, is there anything else you'd like to share with us before we wrap up today?
Oh, well, I mean, one thing I would just add is I really do hope that we can continue the success of implementing PAYS and making it just a regular part of how utilities do business here. And I do hope that other states can look at that. Missouri is not going to be a state where we're leading the pack on a lot of things, but this is something where I think people can learn from a conservative state and learn how we've done things, learn from our mistakes, learn from our successes. And I would just encourage you, we're going to be doing a lot more work on, you know, explaining PAYS and everything. So I'd encourage you to go to renewmo.org, sign up for our newsletter, and you're going to start seeing a lot more, hopefully this summer, about our PAYS education work. So if you want to learn more about this, if you want to contact us, that's the best way to do it. So come find me.
Great. Thank you, James, and great talking with you.
Great talking to you. Thanks again.
The Rise Up Podcast, Season 5, Episode 2, Missouri On Bill Inclusive Financing, Pay As You Save. Special thanks to our guest, James Owen, hosted by Nick Hyla and produced by Kyle Galloway. Made possible with support from the Sally Mead Hands Foundation.